let's take this piece of Mishnah first. The discourse that we're going to be studying, with the help of Hashem, is a discourse said on the 15th of Shvat, Tu B'Shvat, like today, in 1971. And by the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And the discourse, like every discourse, every Maimah Chassidus, each one of these teachings, it's a kind of a Kabbalistic teaching, and it enters, we could say it enters our world. You know, it comes from a spiritual realm and it enters our world. So it enters by means of a quotation. And the quotation is usually from the Torah. So it might be a verse from the Sedra of the week, from the portion of the week. So with a verse from the portion of the week, so it begins, that begins the discourse. But sometimes it is not from the written Torah, it's from the oral Torah. And in this case, it is from the Mishnah. And it's talking about the 15th of Shvat, and the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, which is the Mishnah about the new year altogether, Rosh Hashanah in the autumn, it begins off like this. Arba'a Roshei Shanim Hein. There are four new years. Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much. There are four new years. Be'echad B'Nissan, on the first of Nissan, is Rosh Hashanah Limlachim V'Lir Galim. It is the new year. It's the new year for kings and for festivals. Now, in other words, as you see in the footnote there, for Jewish kings, see the footnote? On whatever day, even if the day was the last day of Adar, one became king, the period to the next first day of Nisan counted as the first year of his reign. This is of importance for the dates of documents. So in other words, the first of Nisan counts as the end of one year and the beginning of the next year for the rule of Jewish kings. So a king became king in Kislev, let's say. So Kislev, Tevet, Shvat, Adar, Nisan, 5 months later, it's the first of Nisan, that's already the second year of the king's rule. Because Nisan, you count, at the first of Nisan, you count that as the new year for kings, V'lir Regalim, and also for festivals. Because if we, as it says in the bottom, in the footnote, if one has dedicated something by vow to the temple, he must fulfill this vow during the period of the three foot festivals, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, and so Nisan, the first of Nisan, is the beginning of that. Right, so that's the first Rosh Hashanah. The second Rosh Hashanah, the Echud Be'elul, the first of Elul is the Rosh Hashanah for Maisa Behema, which means taking a tithe of the cattle, that you take the cattle and you pass them through a gate, and you have to take each one of the tenth, and so therefore that's the day, that's the watershed, as it says in the footnote. An animal born before the first day of Elul was not to be given as tithes for an animal born on or after that day, or vice versa. So in other words, that's the watershed of which year the animal is born. So you can only tithe the animals from year X and not against the animals of year X plus 1. So the first of Elul is the turning point, is the watershed for that. Now, there's Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Shimon Omrim, of course there's another view, very often there's another view, not the first of Elul, but Be'echad B'Tishri, the first of Tishri. Now we're all used to the first of Tishri, that's the third Rosh Hashanah mentioned here, Be'echad B'Tishri Rosh Hashanah L'Shanim. The first of Tishri is the Rosh Hashanah for the year, at Rosh Hashanah, which we call Rosh Hashanah, the first of Tishri. But normally, in normal Jewish language, we say we talk about Rosh Hashanah, we mean the first of Tishrei, which is the new year when we hear the shofar and we send New Year cards to each other and we eat an apple dipped in honey. However, for the sages, this is one of four New Years. And it's the new year for the years, Ulishmitin, and for the Shemitah year as well. That also, this year is actually a Shemitah year. That depends on when Rosh Hashanah is. When is the first of Tishrei? Ul Yovelot, Linetia, Velir Rakot, and the Jubilee year, and also regarding planting and vegetables, exactly when you consider each thing to be planted, relating to tithing vegetables and tithing groups of vegetables growing before that time versus vegetables growing after that time. Okay, finally we're getting to New Year for trees. It's coming up. It's the last two lines of it. Be'echod b'shvat, on the first of Shvat, it's Rosh Hashanah le'ilan, it's the new year for trees. First of Shvat, I thought it was the 15th of Shvat. What did you think? First, Kedivrei Beit Shammai, as Beit Shammai said. So Beit Shammai says the first of Shvat. Beit Hillel Omrim, Beit Hillel say, B'chamisha Osobo, on the 15th. Wow, I thought we'd made a mistake and we had the fruit 2 weeks late. But there it is. So, finally, we've got to the Rosh Hashanah for the trees. And if we look at the footnote at the end, note 12, tree fruit that budded before the first of Shvat, according to Beit Shammai, may not be tithed for free tree fruit that budded later, nor vice versa. In other words, it's presenting the same watershed regarding tithes of the fruit, that once it's past 15th of Shvat, as we finally have the halacha, it's like it's a new year for the trees, and so therefore you have to take the fruit of the new year together with the new year fruit rather than the old year, as far as tithes and various other things are concerned. Okay. It then tells us, the next Mishnah, if we could just go on to the next Mishnah for a minute. Ba'arba prakim ha'olam nidon. At four times the world is judged. Ba'pesach, on Pesach it's judged ala tfuah for the crops. Ba'atzeret, which means Shavuot, al perota ilan, it's judged for the fruit of trees. That's interesting. So although this is the Rosh Hashanah for trees, the time that the world is judged for trees by God is on Shavuot. But Rosh Hashanah and on Rosh Hashanah, all inhabitants of the world pass before, kol ba'i olam avrim lefanav, all inhabitants of the world pass before God like sheep, and then God judges every single thing in the world. And the last line of Bechag nidonin alamayim, and on Sukkot the world is judged for water. So there are four periods when the world is judged, which are different basically: Pesach, Shavuot, Rosh Hashanah, yes, and then Sukkot. So there are four Rosh Hashanah, and there are four times when the world is judged. Of course, the big Rosh Hashanah, when we send Rosh Hashanah cards, have apple and honey, and blow the shofar, and spend some time in shul, usually, to a greater extent than generally, let's say. That is not only Rosh Hashanah for a whole heap of things, it's also a time when the whole world is judged in every detail. So we can understand the significance of our big Rosh Hashanah, the new year, in relation to these other Rosh Hashanah. But we are on the Rosh Hashanah for fruit, and so now we're going to explore what this discourse says about that. And so here we now begin the actual text of the discourse, and so you should have that on the next page. Right. And they're printed both sides, and I'm sorry that the staples are on the wrong side of the thing. Never mind. Now, in order to enter a discourse, you see this step up. It's like a little ladder, you know, which helps a person climb a little bit higher. So we've learnt a few lines from the Mishnah, from the Oral Torah, which help us sort of climb up to be able to hear the discourse. But another method which is used traditionally to help us hear the discourse, the Maimon, this Kabbalistic Hasidic teaching, is through melody. And there's a particular melody called the Maimon Nigun, the melody of the Maimon, which is sung in order to help us enter or listen to the teaching of the discourse. Yo 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 ma yo 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 Arba Rosh Hashanim Heim. There are four Rosh Hashanah, the Echad Nisan, the first of Nisan, etc. The Echad Elul, the first of Elul, etc. The Echad Tishri, the first of Tishri, etc. The Echad Shvat, Rosh Hashanah Le'ilam. The first of Shvat is the Rosh Hashanah for trees, Kedivri Beit Shammai, as Beit Shammai says. Beit Hillel Omrim B'chamish Asabo, and Beit Hillel say on the 15th of the month. The halacha kedivrei Beit Hillel, and the halacha goes according to Beit Hillel. But tzarich lahavin, we have to understand tam hashinui, the reason for the difference. The Rosh Hashanah le'ilan megimel Rosh Hashanim ha'ishonim, the difference between the new year for trees from the other three new years. Shegimel Rosh Hashanim ha'ishonim, the first three new years. Heim b'Rosh Chodesh, they're all on the first of the month. And according to Beis Hillel, Rosh Hashanah Li'ilan u'b'chamish asah is on the 15th of the month. Why are the other three Rosh Hashanah all on the first of the month, and this Rosh Hashanah that we are at now is on the 15th of the month, according to Beis Hillel? Olor Sif. And a further point, Da'al Piyah Mavur b'makom acher, according to what is explained elsewhere, Shashaychud the Gimel Regalim leYom Tetzav b'Chodesh, the reason why the festivals have a connection with the 15th of the month, like Pesach relates to the 15th of the month, the first day of Pesach, the 15th. Sukkot is on the 15th of the month, So, and Shavuot, it's not on the 15th, but we count it from Pesach. But there, it's starting, so Pesach starts on the 15th of the month, therefore Shavuot is the 50th day after that. But Sukkot is on the 1st of the month. Hi.
It's disappeared.
Well, maybe he'll come back. Mrs. Akiva waited for many years for us. Is Rabbi Akiva coming back?
No, he's going to bed.
He's going to bed, okay.
Too many vomits was received.
Good night.
Okay. So the fifth, why are the festivals on the 15th of the month, Pesach and Sukkot? Hu ki b'yom ha-tetvav, what's different about the 15th of the month? What's special about the 15th of the Jewish month?
Full moon.
On the 15th of the Jewish month, the moon is full. Good for business.
For therapists, yeah.
So that is the explanation that is given quite frequently why the festivals were on the 15th of the month. Ki bayom hatetvav, because on the 15th of the month was shleimut halavana, it's the fullness of the moon. Shezem more al gam, that also indicates al shleimut de Yisrael, the wholeness of the Jewish people. It's not only the full moon, it's the full moon relating to the spiritual dimension of the Jewish people. Shemonin lelevana v'domin lelevana, we the Jewish people count our months by the moon, whereas the Christians count their months by the sun. And so very often the sages make the distinction between the Jews and the nations of the world, the Christians, who count by the sun, because we have a certain similarity to the moon. On the other hand, the Muslims only count by the moon, whereas we adjust our year so that although we count each month according to the moon, we actually have a system, a complicated system of leap years, so that our lunar year keeps pace with the solar year. So Pesach, for example, always occurs in the spring. And there is a system of leap years to ensure that there's an extra month in certain years, like this year, an extra Adar, so that Pesach will be in the spring. Whereas, for the Muslims, Ramadan, to take an example, could be at any time of the year. It shifts round the year with the passage of the, if you have 12 lunar months in a year, then any particular month will move around the year. One time it'll be spring, then summer, then autumn, and so on. So we actually are balancing the sun and the moon together. But in particular, we are seen as representing the moon represents our spiritual dimension, and we are similar to the moon in various ways. One of the ways we're similar to the moon is that the moon waxes and wanes. It grows bigger and it grows smaller. So we have periods of flourishing, and then we again went into exile again, and then we flourish again, and then we go down, like the stock market. So according to this, צריך לומר, we should say, דזה שהוא הממשלה ראש השנים, that the fact that most of the Rosh Hashanahs, and in fact, to the Dat Beit Shammai, call a Dalet Rosh Hashanim. According to a Beit Shammai, all, since Beit Shammai says even Rosh Hashanah for trees is also on the first of the month, according to Beit Shammai, all the four new years are on the first of the month. Heim Rosh Chodesh, they're on the first of the month. The eight Molad Halavana. Now, Rosh Chodesh is the time when it's what's called the new moon in English, which in Hebrew it's called the birth of the moon. Molad Halavana, when the Levana, Sha'az Halavana, Irak Nekuda, then the moon is just a dot, a thin, if you manage to see it right at the beginning of the month, it's a very, very thin sliver. Hu Nefish Inyan Rosh Hashanah, Hu Shebo Nimshach Inyan Shu Rosh Hashanah Alav. the idea of the new year is that at that point is drawn afresh, is drawn down afresh, that concept for which it is the Rosh Hashanah. והעניינים כמו שהם בתחילת המשכתם הם רק נקודה. And at the beginning of that drawing down, the beginning of the birth of that process, the it's only a little dot. Then it grows and it grows and it grows, it gets bigger and bigger. ועל פי זה צריך להבין עוד יותר, so we have to understand even more, מה שראש השנה לאילן הוא ב-15. Why is the new year for trees on the 15th of the month? Okay? So that is the basic question at the beginning of the discourse. Now, I was having a debate with myself as I was coming here. You see, these discourses are very often like a kind of detective story. You know, it starts off with a question at the beginning, and then eventually you get through and you get to the answer at the end, you know. And so so I was wondering if it spoils the story if I tell you the answer right at the beginning, right now. Why is Rosh Hashanah for trees on the 15th of the month and not the 1st? But I think that it's such a subtle idea that I think it's worth my trying to explain it to you. And then we'll see it in the discourse itself. You see, as it is, it's just a question. You know, one could easily go to sleep this evening without having the question resolved. You know, why is it on the 15th of the month or the 1st of the month? You know? Well, that's the Jewish calendar, isn't it? But the point is that these questions are really trying to prod the whole nature of Jewish teaching and to discover some further dimension in them. Now, at its most abstract level, this discourse is about the idea of enjoying Judaism. Enjoyment. The Hebrew word is ta'anug. Ta'anug is actually a very exalted word, delight. The idea that within Jewish teaching and Jewish life, there is a tremendous delight that we can experience. Now, the idea that we're doing it because it's delightful, you know, is it just another kick, you know, turn on with Judaism? It's a very interesting issue, and what happens in this discourse is a kind of almost mental acrobatics proving that even something that we're supposed to do with total selflessness, like a mitzvah from the Torah, let's say a mitzvah that we don't understand why we have to do it, and it may even be quite difficult to do or very challenging in one way or the other, and nonetheless we do it, listen, that's what the Torah says, we have to do it with Kabbalat Ol, and so we do it, that can also be done with tremendous joy and delight, ta'anug. And so the theme of this discourse is delight, and the origin of the delight is Torah study. Torah study is in fact a delight, a phenomenal delight. It's an incredible delight on every level. And even there you have questions, you know, isn't Torah study just one's own personal, you know, what kind of delight is it? And the discourse tries to show, I mean, it shows whether we see it, but it's trying to show us that Torah study is a kind of an infinite spiritual delight that God enables us to share. It's really a divine delight, and we're invited to share that delight and experience this divine delight. And from the Torah, it percolates down into the mitzvot of the Torah, the laws of the Torah, the teachings of the Torah, the Jewish lifestyle. So in the end, the whole thing is suffused with this beautiful atmosphere of delight. And the Rosh Hashanah of trees, which represents fruit, fruits represent ta'anug, delight. Fruits are not eaten usually as a staple diet. If people are hungry, you know, so what do you give them? You give them bread, you give them potatoes, you give them meat, you give them something which is satisfies them as far as hunger is concerned. Then when they have eaten enough, they're not hungry anymore, then a bowl of fruit is brought to the table and people have some fruit as a dessert, as something tasty, as an extra dimension. Now that is read back into Torah. So the fruit really represents Torah and the delight of Torah. And that relates to the new moon or the full moon, because the full moon represents spiritual delight. It's like a revelation of the moon. It's the full power of the spiritual aura which is coming, emanating from the moon. So that's the theme of the discourse, in brief. And we're now going to try to see how the discourse, you know, step by step ravels it out. And, you know, we may have to skip bits. But that's basically what it's about. It's the sense of delight and the way the delight connects with fruit of a tree, and the way that indeed relates to the wholeness of the moon, the fullness of the moon, meaning sort of a positive spiritual completion and fulfillment. So we're entering into a teaching which is trying to make us realize that we are enjoying a divine delight. You know, it's like someone goes on a cruise and you know, they're standing on the deck of this ship. There are lots of jokes about people going on cruises. But they're on this cruise and they're standing on the deck of the ship, and they're actually worrying about something or other at home or something else in their lives, you know, and some friend of theirs or another passenger, you know, standing next to them, and they see the, you know, the spray of the sea and the, you know, porpoises or whatever it is, and suddenly the person next to them says, oh, isn't this beautiful? And you suddenly realize, you know what? It is beautiful. I've been worrying about the bank rate or this or that, you know, but actually it's very beautiful. So that's what a discourse in this, particularly this one, is trying to show us the beauty, the delight of Jewish teaching and Jewish life. Okay, so we are in chapter 2, the Yuvamzeh.
Can I just suggest that maybe the reason for the 15th of the month is that the fruit is best when it's ripe and the moon is full.
Ah. Okay, that's very nice. Yeah. I mean, the other thing is that the 15th of the month, in the Hebrew letters which become numbers, Yud and He is the 15th. So Yud and He really represents the divine name. You know, so it's sort of a divine revelation. So you could say the very idea of the ripeness of the fruit, you know, that's, that itself has something.
And is the 15th of months, other than these festival months, a significant day in Jewish life? It's the day of the full moon.
Rosh Chodesh is on the first of the month. See, that's interesting thing. Rosh Chodesh is the beginning of the month, when the moon is just beginning.
Yes, spiritually.
Many, you see, there are many like other festivals. There's 15th of Av. What were you going to say?
Nisan.
Well, Nisan and Tishri. You've got Pesach and Shavuot.
I was going to say that mystically, somebody told me that it was a Sfaradi minhag to go and visit if they had a relative's grave who died. And they should go and visit on the 15th of the month.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I didn't know that custom.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah?
I didn't know it either. I mean, this guy told me.
Where's he from? I mean, is it from Morocco or is it from
I'll try and find out.
Iran, you know.
I know it's a Svardi.
Svardi is the whole world.
Yeah.
Like the difference in Hungary and
I'll
Frankfurt.
Find out.
Right, the Yuvan Seba Haktim Hambavova Kamadrushim, and this will be understood through exploring what is explained in a number of discourses. The festivals are fixed in relation to the agricultural year. The Chag HaPesach Tzorich Liot Bizman HaAviv, Pesach has to be at the time of spring, which is Zman Gmar Se'orim, which is the time of the barley harvest. Then you got the festival of Shavuot, Shenikra B'Shem Chag HaKatzir, which is called the festival of reaping, Al Shem Bikurei Ktzir Chitim, and it's the time when the wheat harvest is cut. V'chein Chag HaSukkot, and also Sukkot is called Nikra B'Shem Chag HaAsif, it's called the festival of ingathering, the harvest festival. Right, so Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot all relate, which is the end of the reaping, the end of the harvest. So all the three main festivals relate to the cycle of the agricultural year in Israel. Hamachuvan. Now, what this means, beikah mainly, is the Tfuah Haruchanit. It's actually the agricultural year here, really. It's speaking about two things at once, but what we're focusing now is on the inner dimension. The spiritual harvest, which is the person. The person, Heim Yisrael, the Jew, the individual and the people, have got a quality which relates us to something which is planted and which grows. Dichsiv Bahu, it says about the Jewish people, Kodesh Yisrael HaShem, the Jewish people are holy to God. It says this in Jeremiah. Reishit Tfuata. They're the first of its harvest. V'zeh sharagalim tzichim liyot bezman nigmar v'asibat ha'tfuot v'gashmiut. And the fact that the festivals are at the time of the physical harvest, who ki kol ha'inyanim shebegashmiut, is because all aspects of the physical world mishtal shalim minyanam beruchniut emerge from their spiritual inner dimension. Now that itself is a very interesting idea, because it means that everything in life at root is based on spiritual interactions and processes, and our physical lives as human beings emerge from those inner spiritual processes. So we may think that the reason why we go to work and earn money is because we need money to pay the mortgage and to buy food to eat. But in fact, the whole process of going to work and having money and then doing things with that money, that is all really part of a whole spiritual construct. And everything in our lives is part of a spiritual construct. And because of that spiritual construct emerges some sort of practical activity of one kind or another. So the physical harvests and the agricultural year in the land of Israel, which in the Torah seems to be the basis of the clock of the festival, in fact relates to a kind of spiritual clock which concerns the individual and his or her relationship with Hashem as part of, particularly as being part of the Jewish people in relation to God. According to this, Yeshloma, one can suggest Gamba Negel Rosh Hashanah Leilan, also as regards the new year for trees, Sheikar in Yano Hu Shehu Rosh Hashanah LaAdam. The main thing about this new year for trees is that it's the new year for the person. Shenim Shali Ilan, and a person is compared to a tree, as it says, Ki Adam Eitz HaSadeh. It says in Kitetzei, in Shoftim, sorry. It says, is a man a tree of the field? Now, it's saying that as a question in the Torah, but the sages take it as, in the Midrash, in a reverse way. The Torah says, is a man a tree of the field? It's talking about an army besieging a city. And it says, don't cut down the trees around the city, because is a tree a man that he can run away and hide in the city? He can't. He's defenseless. The tree is defenseless, so don't cut it down. So that's what a fruit tree. So that's what it says there as a question, but the sages turn the sentence using the same word order, but just without it being a question. Ki ha'adam eitz ha'sadeh. Man is a tree of a field. Man or woman is a tree of the field. U'mizeh nishtalsha. And because man is a tree of the field, and there's something very special happening on the new year for trees, on that 15th of the month of Shvat, from this comes Shul Rosh Hashanah Li'ilan, it becomes the new year for trees, physically, in simple terms, real trees. And according to the saying of the sages on this verse, Ki Adam Eitz HaSadeh, it says there, man is a tree of the field. Im Talmid Chacham, if he's a Torah sage, eat his fruit. If he's not, be careful. So it's like comparing a person to a tree. You have to know where you're imbibing. People communicate different kinds of teachings. Be careful where the teaching is coming from, if this person really is a sage or transmitting teachings of the sages. So from that idea that the Jewish people are compared to trees, Yesh Lamar, one can suggest, the fact that the Jewish people are called a crop, and the crop might be wheat and barley. See, this is the whole theme in Tanakh, calling the Jewish people, Israel, as a crop, a harvest. Humitzad ha'avodah shalehem. It concerns their effort, their service, b'kiyumah mitzvot, in keeping mitzvot. So when we call them a crop, like wheat or barley, it's talking about mitzvot. V'zeh shenikayim b'shem ilan, but when we're called trees, like the tree of the field, hu al yedei esek ha-torah, it means Torah study. Right, so we've got this planting image. We're planted in the field and we're harvested in some way. Our spiritual qualities flourish and grow and come to fruition and ripen. So there's one dimension that we're like a crop, like a beautiful field of barley or something like that, which is like the mitzvot that we do. And then there's another aspect where it's the person is like a tree bearing beautiful, tasty fruit, and that is Torah study. B'shem Adam hu al shem ha-seichel, because the name Adam is that refers ki Adam hu eitz ha-sadeh. Is it Adam? It's man. That use of the word man, Adam, is talking about the intellect. So there's the mitzvah, which are practical activities, and also there is the fruit of the tree, which is like the Torah with our minds. Okay. So we're moving towards the concept of what kind of relationship with the divine is set up, whether through in these two dimensions. One is keeping of mitzvot, like the produce of the field, and the other is learning Torah, like the fruit of a tree. And what it's going to come to eventually, I mean, it's quite a lengthy discourse, and we're going to have to cut it short at some point, and the question is, you know, whether I'll manage to fit all the right bits together. But the theme is going to be that the special relationship with the divine that we get from learning Torah percolates through to other aspects of our relationship with God, including and especially the mitzvah. So that everything is permeated with this sense of delight. So it's like this discourse is a kind of, it's like going into a garden. You know, it talks about you go into a garden with fruit trees, and suddenly it's like relaxed and fragrant and beautiful. You know, that it's as if in Jewish life that's always there. That's always a possibility. And we go through all kinds of different things, and suddenly you draw aside the curtain, and there is this beautiful garden, this beautiful, fragrant quality. Of course, when it talks about the Rosh Hashanah for trees, which happens to be tonight, today, It doesn't mean that this only applies today. It's that today teaches us something which then applies every day of our lives. You know, all Hasidic teaching is like that.
Question, Tavi. This wonderful phrase, Ki Ha'adam Eitz Hashadeh, is that a quotation?
Yes.
What
is it? It's talking about a situation where in this part of the Torah it's giving rules for warfare, and it says that there'll be a Jewish army.
Which part of the Torah is it from then?
Here, you've got the footnote at the bottom.
Zevorim.
You see, Devarim. Footnote 17, Shoftim, which is in Devarim, in Deuteronomy, chapter 20, verse 19. You see that footnote 17? You see, and it says Kof Yud Tes. Now, what's tricky here is that it gives the name of the Sedra instead of just saying Deuteronomy, Dvarim. But it is in Dvarim. That's Anthony's son.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's... It is a very powerful phrase, and that's
beautiful phrase.
All the teachings, you know, many Hasidic or general teachings about Tu B'Shvat very often quote that phrase, which compares man to a tree. For example, there's the idea that trees continually grow, which is very interesting. They're always growing. Either they're growing higher, or the bark is always getting thicker. So there's a continuous process of growth. You know, an animal reaches full size and that's it, stays the same. Laddie, you know, hasn't changed for a month.
Getting to that.
You're feeding it. But trees grow, and in the same way, a human being always has to grow. We can't stay still. We always have to be advancing.
So there's this beautiful, it's related to this passage from the Psalms, Tzadik
Katama Yifrach. Yes, the righteous flourishes like a date palm. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so you could say that there is a theme in the written Torah, which then goes into the oral Torah, comparing people to trees in different situations. Yeah, that's it. Okay, so here it's taking the general idea of comparing us in some way to either crops that can be harvested or to trees, and the crops are relating to mitzvah and the trees are relating to Torah study with the delight which emerges from Torah study. Okay. Let's just see Gimel. V'hineh mavua b'adrushim. Now it's explained in the teachings. You see, the Rebbe's discourse, the Rebbe was the seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe, and his discourse, apart from quoting the Talmud and Midrash and Halakha and the Bible and other commentaries and Kabbalistic texts and the Zohar, it's particularly in relation to the teachings of the six Lubavitch teachers who preceded him. So that's his frame of reference, and so you can often take a discourse which begins in a particular way, which is said in the seventh generation, you could see a similar discourse in the sixth generation, the fifth generation, and so on. That there are these like families or dynasties of discourses which go through the generations, and they develop in a particular way. There's a very great rabbi in New York called Rabbi Yoel Kahn, who specializes in showing what is different about the Rebbe's teaching to the previous Rebbe or the other previous Lubavitch teachers, what the Rebbe's chiddush is, what is the new point that the Rebbe says, because Rabbi Yoel Kahn has learned and remembers and knows very, very clearly all the teachings from all the Rebbeim. And so when he looks at the Rebbe's discourse, he's able to see, this is different. you know, and he he's able to put his finger on that. So there are a series of books slowly coming out with Rabbi Yoel Kahn's discussions of these discourses, which of course are more elevated way of studying them. And eventually, hopefully, they'll all get translated into English. At the moment, it's all in Hebrew. But it's called Hasidus Mevu'eres, Explain Hasidus. So he takes a maimer and he clarifies exactly what the maimer means and gives little extra points here and there. In fact, there are a few people who like write Hebrew commentaries on this, on these discourses. Now, so we're in section Gimel. Behine mevur badrushim, behold, it explains in previous discourses hashaychut gimel regalim, the relationship of the festivals, lizmani bishul atfuot, to the time of the ripening of the harvest, kios, because then during the time of the festivals, hutzmichat atfuah ruchanit, it's the flourishing of the spiritual harvest, shal yedei azriah, which comes through the planting. So in other words, a festival like Pesach is a time of something special flourishing within the individual Jew and within the Jewish people, and that's why at that time it's the barley harvest. Now it says, footnote 22, it gives a reference to Hosea. Now, I thought this was such a lovely verse that I wrote the whole thing down. I just want to tell you what that verse says, because here it only quotes three words of it. Uzrati ha-li ba'aretz, I will plant it for me in the earth. God is saying this. I will plant it for me in the earth. V'richamti et lo ruchana, and I will have mercy on the one who has not being treated mercifully. Va'amarti lelo ami, and I will say to the one who thinks, so to speak, that she's not my people, I'll say to them, ami ata, you are my people. V'hu yoma, and he, that people, will say to me, Elokai, you're my God. It's the most beautiful verse expressing restitution and coming back together. What's the word? The two people have been apart and now
reconciliation.
Yeah, it's reconciliation.
It's like the cornerstone, like in the Hallel.
Yes. Evan Masu Amonim, the stone that the builders rejected,
has become the cornerstone.
Yes, yes. But here it's very much in terms of two figures, the people and God. I'll just say it again in English. I will plant it for me in the earth. In other words, here's this image of planting the Jewish people. And I will have mercy on the one who feels or has not had mercy shown to her. I will say to the one who feels they're not my people, I'll say to them, Ami ata, you are my people. And they will respond and say to me, Elokai, my God, you are my God. Very, very beautiful coming together. So that's in Hosea chapter 2, verse 25. It says that in footnote number 22. It gives the reference.
Hosea chapter 2 verses 25.
Yeah. Hosea 2, 25. Yeah. Now, it is known, it says, it is known, and this it is known means he's referring to teachings by the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rav Shneur Zalman, and the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rav Dov Ber, that this is talking about Shezekoi al Yeridat HaNeshamot. It's talking about the descent of souls into the world. When it says, I'll sow it for me in the earth, the souls, Tfuah Ruchanit, the spiritual harvest, is being brought down, Lamata, below, Litlabesh Beguf, to be enclosed in a physical body, the nefesh habahamid and the animal soul, which is like the earth. It's fascinating. Our physical body, which the Torah says is made of dust, is made of earth. First of all, God made Adam out of earth, out of dust, and then he breathed into him the soul. And Adam includes Adam and Eve. So there is the soul in the earth, and it's like planting a seed in the earth, like physically planting a seed in the earth. So there is the planting of the soul into the earth of our physical body and our animal appetites and concerns. That's one dimension of this planting. And then there's a second dimension. Ubepratiyut yoter, and further, at a further level, al hayirida de galut, the descent into exile. There we were in the land of Israel with the beautiful temple, and then came a whole chaotic chain of events, and the end is the destruction of the temple, and huge numbers of Jews sold into slavery around the Roman Empire, around the Mediterranean, and somehow or other we managed to get ourselves free, possibly because we wouldn't work on Shabbat, so we weren't much good as slaves. And so we got out of that, and there we were parked all around the Mediterranean, in Spain, in Italy, and elsewhere. And here we are, the Jewish people in exile. But in fact, that's planting us. We're being planted. A plant. What our enemies say has some truth in it. We're being planted around the world in order to churn it all up. So, Shahakavana Bazehi, and the purpose of this is Litzorech Aliyah. The reason why we descend into exile is in order to ascend, to climb higher and higher. It's just like planting a seed in the ground, kipshuta, in very simple literal terms. Shehi b'shvilat smicha, and you plant grain in the soil in order that it should grow b'ribu yoter mikamo shehaya b'tchila, much more than it was at the beginning. You plant a handful of corn and it brings out a lots more corn than you began with. You plant a seed, it becomes a tree which has bears, you know, hundreds of fruits or whatever it is. So the point of planting is to reach something which is manifoldly much more than you began with. V'hatzmicha aliyah, and this growing, this flourishing, this ascent, hi alidei kiyum haTorah mitzvot, is through keeping and studying Torah and keeping mitzvot, shenikra gamkin b'shem zriya, which is also called planting. The nosaf l'zriya d'yeridat haneshama lama lamata, because in addition to the idea of the planting of the soul descending below, that God made the soul descend into this lower world, tzricha liyot gam, there also has to be our effort, avodat hazriya de Yisrael, the service of planting of the Jewish people, that we are doing something which is described very often as the work of planting and plowing, making things grow in terms of kiyum haTorah mitzvot, through our daily life, studying Torah, keeping mitzvot, living a Jewish lifestyle. The al yedei shaneshamot yardu lamata, because through the fact that the souls descended below, b'fchat b'zman ha-galut, especially in the time of exile, u'mikom makom, and nonetheless, despite all the opposition, despite all the problems, hey, mekayimim Torah mitzvot, they keep Torah mitzvot, be'it kafya, and sometimes it's really difficult, and there's a struggle. And sometimes, ve'it hafcha, we get so inspired, we get carried away, and we do it automatically. So those are two different modes of keeping Torah mitzvah. Al yedei ze naaseh atzmicha. Through that, the growing, the flourishing takes place. Hamshachat gilui na'aleh yoter. We provoke a revelation which is be'ein aroch, which is infinitely greater than the revelation, the divine revelation that the soul enjoyed before it descended below. In other words, the soul, by nature, is close to God, and it has a certain illumination from God. That's before it gets born into this world. Then the soul is sent into this world, and it comes into this world, a little baby is born, to a world of enormous difficulty and challenge of all different kinds, and every kind of negative thing might take place around one in life. And there is this child growing up and facing this, and certainly very far from the divine illumination that it enjoyed as a soul when it was under the throne of glory before it came into this world. And not only that, that it's a human being with an animal soul, which is distorting things and putting it this way and that way. It can be in exile as well. It can be in a time, a very difficult time sometimes. Sometimes it's not so difficult, sometimes more. But the purpose of this is that the soul achieves a greater closeness to the divine. And being in this world and going through these problems, it achieves that closeness to the divine, this divine illumination, greater than it had originally before it was born. And the real revelation caused by this flourishing year la'atid lavo will be in the future when Mashiach will come. Then there will really be this intense glow for every neshama. And a gleam of this future glow shines also now in the Shalosh Regalim, in the three festivals. On the festival of Pesach, Shul Tzmichat Bishul Se'orim, when it's the time of the barley harvest. Now that relates to fear of God. Hu Inyan Hayira. Shehi Shar HaRishon. Fear is the first gate in coming close to God. Sha'al Yadon Yichnasim Ledov Kabo Yitbarach, through which we pass in order to cleave to God. That's why barley has these letters. Soor hey, that's soora, barley. Soor humiloshon sha, and soor means gate. Vahei hi hei tata malchut. And the hey is the lower hey of the divine name, meaning malchut. So we have sha'a, which is a gate, and it's Sha'ah Hei. Now that Hei is the fourth letter of the divine name, and so it's the gate to the divine, and that's the first level of entry to the divine, which is called, well, let's say awe of God. Now the trouble with awe and fear is that in English, people can't relate to these concepts. And you see, there's love of God. And we can relate a bit more to love of God. But in a peculiar way, love has been distorted to a certain extent in the popular imagination, but then we're able to understand, yeah, that is only a distortion. And the real love, we can understand what real love is. But somehow, I'm not quite sure of the process, why, we've lost fear. I think fear, the loss of fear, is something to do with the process of secularization. We've lost fear as a positive quality in relationship to the divine. And actually fear, awe of God, intense awe of God, is something exceedingly beautiful. But we've, as a society, we've sort of lost the taste for it. You know, I don't know whether it's all got drained off into frightening films or something like that. You know, that we've just lost the understanding what fear is about. And You know, as we've lost many kinds of respect in human relationships, there's very little respect. And so, but in fact, that quality of awe, that quality of respect for the divine, with awe of the divine, that's the first gate. So that's Pesach. That is the barley. Right? So barley, se'ora, is the gate to the letter He, and that is at Pesach, because at Pesach the barley gets ripe, and that's why we have the Omer, which is a measure of barley, which is offered on Pesach. Okay. Next we go, Uberegel HaSheni, and on the second festival, which is Shavuot, that is the time when the wheat grows. Now wheat is the food of the person, and that represents Torah. Now, I said before that fruit represents Torah. And he's going to balance wheat and fruit representing Torah. Wheat is more the mitzvah of learning Torah. There is a mitzvah to learn Torah. Fruit is the delight of learning Torah. Okay, so we've got both the wheat and the fruit representing Torah, but here it's talking about wheat. And the wheat is the food of people, unlike barley, which is seen as food of animals primarily. Hu haTorah dichtiv bazot haTorah Adam. It's here's another use of words in this fascinating way. There is a section of the Torah. It's in Parshas Pora, actually, Chukah. It's telling us about the red heifer. It says this is the teaching. If a man dies in a tent, then you have to do this and this and this. So the first three words are Zot Torah Adam. This is the Torah, man. Right? Just take those three words by themselves. So that means the Torah is called man. A man is called the Torah. So wheat is the food of men, as opposed to barley being the food of animals. So therefore wheat relates to the Torah. It's a very interesting all this is the kind of midrashic process of identities. This equals this equals this equals this, and one word is translated into another word is translated into another word. So somehow or other you get to the concept that wheat represents Torah. So, and also there's another point, chita. Right, this is wheat in Hebrew. Chet is 8, 9, tet is 9, hey is 5. What do they add up to?
18.
8 and 9. 22. 22. Okay, it's 22. Now that represents the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet with which the Torah is written. So that's another way of seeing that wheat represents the Torah. As explained in these teachings, this is so that is the connection of Shavuot to the Torah, and that's also the connection of Shavuot. See, we've got two things. Pesach was fear. Okay, remember Pesach. We're now going to Shavuot. Going through the whole year here. Shavuot is wheat. Chita equals Torah. Okay? A few different ways, 22 letters, and so on, right? There's another thing. This is the connection of Shavuot to fruit. What's the connection of Shavuot to fruit? We saw in the second Mishnah that on Shavuot, the fruit trees are judged. Right? Do you remember that? In the second Mishnah. So that is why also on Shavuot you have fruit trees as well, because kichita. Now, okay, there's one opinion that wheat itself is a kind of tree. It's interesting. When Adam and Eve ate from the tree in the Garden of Eden, it says clearly it was a tree. But there's an opinion among the sages they ate wheat. That's what they ate. So wheat is sometimes thought of as a tree. But another aspect of it is that wheat relates to Torah and fruit trees relate to Torah. So we're coming back to Torah, you know, so it's whether it's the wheat that's Torah or the fruit trees that are Torah, they both relate to Shavuot, when of course the Torah was given on Shavuot. And so there we have this idea of Torah on Shavuot. And right, so there we have the whole idea of Torah being that. Now he then explains, we're getting late now. The next paragraph is paragraph 4. Briefly, what he says here is that the comparison of a harvest, like barley, let's say, to keeping mitzvah is because what happens when you plant a grain in the ground? There's a process which, from the, in Hasidic teaching, it's looked at like this, that the outer casing of the grain rots. There's a process of dissolution. And from that comes growth. Now, when we're told to do a mitzvah, let's say a person didn't keep kasher, and they suddenly decide, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to start eating kosher. Now, this is an incredible self-subjugation to a rule, you know, to a set of rules. How am I going to keep kosher? What exactly does it mean, kosher? All right, I go to the bookshop or look on the internet. I find a whole set of rules. What does it mean, keeping kosher? Do this, don't do that. I've got to change. I have to get someone to come and kosher my kitchen. You know, it's like a whole submission of one's identity to a higher force. You know, like if someone calls up my dear friend and mentor, Rabbi Fudofas, the son of this Rabbi Fudofas, who's in this painting, picture, and he comes along to kosher at one's kitchen, and he starts heating things up red hot and doing this and doing that. You know, if I'm the person who's home, he's koshering, you know, I feel almost like a grain of wheat in the ground, you know, like, it's he picks something up. Yes, this you can keep, but that you can't. You know, you know, one is sort of submitting to this force of Torah. Keeping mitzvahs is a submission to a force from Torah, which may well be, for many people, very uncomfortable. In fact, that might be why many people don't want to keep mitzvah of the Torah. It's I have to submit to this. I have to submit to that. What do you want of me? So hear what it's saying, that there is a kind of selflessness in the keeping of mitzvot, almost a kind of self-abandon. Now, when I was reading this discourse earlier, I wrote a note over here, apotheosis of secularism. Because it's precisely because the person has gone through a process, or the generation has gone through a process of secularization, and suddenly it's an enormous challenge for them to keep the mitzvah. See, if everyone keeps mitzvah, it's a bit different. If that's the only way people live, you know, so that's the pattern of life. There's no struggle involved. It's just that's what you do. There isn't any, you know, if someone wanted to eat non-kosher food in Stamford Hill, you know, so where's he going to eat? Even the Morrison's has a kosher shelf. He'd have to really go out of his way. It would be a challenge. Whereas a person could be somewhere else where it's the other way around is a challenge. And so what it's saying here is that through us facing this challenge, almost as it were, being ground up like the dissolving away like the grain of the grain in the soil, we are in fact achieving something called bitul, selflessness, a beautiful spiritual quality of selflessness, but it's in the guise of divestment of self. Now he then marches into the concept of Torah as delight. So we've got the idea that the mitzvot are a kind of self-dissolution in order to keep the mitzvah. But then we have the idea of Torah as a tremendous delight. And the discourse explores the idea, you know, what kind of delight is this? It's a delight where the person is somehow making access to a teaching which emanates from the divine. And we, our human mind, is sort of just, you know, receiving this. And it's true that our mind has to try and understand it, and we discuss it and so on, but nonetheless, it's really beyond us. We're like a glove, and a hand is going into the glove and moving us around. It's the Torah of God inside us, and it's an incredible experience. That's what he's putting over. It's an incredible experience. And the tainug, the delight that emerges from this experience, then percolates into the mitzvot as well, because the only way we know the mitzvot of how to keep a kosher home is because it says it in the Torah. And so therefore all the mitzvot get imbued with this delight as well. So even if it seems to a person that it was a struggle to keep a mitzvah and they had to somehow submit their individuality to the rules of the code of law and the rabbi, you know, you come to the rabbi, you know, can I do this, can I not do that, you know, and you're like, you know, you're waiting for this answer from the rabbi, you know, which can sometimes be about very intimate aspects of life, you know, and then the rabbi is going to give this answer, yes or no, and at the same time, which you could say is complete suspension of the personality of the individual. But the way this discourse moves is the delight of Torah study and the delight of the connection with the divine that we have through the Torah enters, it percolates into the mitzvot that we do, so that even something which seems to be a suspension of our individuality, like a servant is told, go, a slave, you know, go here, go there. But no, it's actually our delight, and this is sort of the theme which is then developed at considerable length in this teaching, and he then talks about a garden and going into a garden and the relaxing. That's in section Vav, page Chet, paragraph Vav, where he talks about four lines from the bottom, Ulohosif, and to add, Shegam re'iat hilam, even just seeing the tree, not only eating its fruit, but just seeing it, goremet ta'anug, causes delight. The quality, you know, it's as if like just looking at the books on the bookshelf, you know, which contain such beautiful Torah teachings. You know, you feel this warm glow inside you. And so there we have the idea of walking in the garden, tiyul bagan, walking, going for a walk in the garden, which is a place where trees grow, is delightful. You know, now that is the delight of the individual, the delight of the soul connecting with God through the whole idea of the learning of the Torah. And through that, he explains the difference between the Rosh Hashanah for trees compared with the Rosh Hashanah for vegetables that we spoke about before. There's also Rosh Hashanah for vegetables, even though vegetables include wheat and so on, but nonetheless, it is the Torah which has got this tremendous force of delight, and that extends also into the mitzvot. And so if we go to the very end, the last page, It having developed this theme, it sort of explores it in all kinds of different ways. The delight of the Torah blending with the self surrender in the mitzvah, and it's a surrender which is a surrender of delight, and that is our relationship with the divine. So it says on chapter 10, v'zeu, and that's why she'al yedei Torah, through Torah, Huam Shachata Tanug, we draw down the light, Gam ba'avodah dekabalat ol shebekiyum ha-mitzvot. Also in the service of accepting the yoke in the keeping of mitzvah. Now, for any bocha in the yeshiva around the corner, you say, kabbalah zol, accept the yoke. You know, it implies giving up. It usually implies getting up in the morning or something or other, which people don't find very, very much to their taste. But the idea that mixing delight with kabbalat ol, that in fact it's the delight expressed by the fruit, which is what, and the delight is the whole concept. It's a very beautiful idea that our whole existence is in order to achieve a divine delight through us being here in the world, whether we're learning Torah, keeping mitzvot, or doing anything in terms of what God wants us to do. We are therefore fulfilling a divine kavanah, divine intention through creation, and in that way we are achieving this tremendous quality of delight. And that is the 15th of Shvat, the Rosh Hashanah for trees, which gives us this quality of delight through all aspects of our lives throughout the year.
Okay. Was he saying earlier that the coming of the soul down into the body was similar to planting? Saying it's the same process.
Yes.
In other words, he's saying the fact that the soul comes down into the body down in this world helps it to develop.
Yes, it develops in spiritual terms.
In the same way as when you plant a seed in the ground, it helps it to grow.
Yes, yeah. Even though the soul is very challenged in this world, because it has to face the limitations of being in a body and being confronted with an animal soul which is pulling it in the opposite direction.
Yeah. But you might say it's rather like it's like exercise, the body.
That would be a positive view.
Exercise is very challenging, you know.
Yeah.
If I decide I'm going to lift up weights 20 times every night, every day, it's very, very challenging to my body. I might end up with much stronger muscles.
Yeah, okay. I accept that image.
That's the image I think of.
Well, it's putting the soul through this very intense obstacle course. The thing about exercise is that normally the person doesn't fall in the soup through doing the exercise. You know, it's more like
it's
sending.
Not dangerous.
That's right. If you send a person like mountain climbing or something, you know, by themselves without a torch at night. Okay, but then night turns to day, and
this is being very medical. Yeah, there's just one particular point. I'm not sure that I can really show some Bali in association with all of God, Pesach. I always thought Pesach was the festival for wheat, hence the matzah.
You see, the relationship between Pesach and Shavuot is that on Pesach we do not eat leavened bread, so we have matzah.
Yeah.
Right. And on Pesach, by Pesach, the barley has ripened, and so the second day of Pesach in Israel, which would be the first day of Chol HaMoed, the Omer was offered in the temple, which is a measure of barley. Then continues the counting of the Omer. Now, you can't eat the new produce at all before Pesach. But once you've offered the Omer, and now after the second day of Pesach anyway, we can eat the new grain. But in the time of the temple, wheat could not be offered in the temple until Shavuot, which comes 50 days after Pesach. Then on Shavuot, there is a unique offering, which is never offered any other time of the year, two leavened loaves of wheat bread are offered in the temple on Shavuot. So Pesach is really the festival of barley, And then the leavened wheat. You see, the real quality of wheat is when it's actually leavened as a leavened loaf of bread, challah. That's achieved on Shavuot.
And the Omer is the build-up.
Yes.
It's a progressive. Yeah. That's helpful.
Is that also why you don't have matzah before Pesach?
Well, not having matzah before Pesach is so that we should eat the matzah with a delight, with an enjoyment. Mm-hmm. We should be looking forward to the matzah. Because
we've been refraining from having something.
Yes, and then makes it more enjoyable. Yeah, it's like something we're looking forward to. Mm. Yes.
This idea of the seed, that you plant the seed, it goes back. There's a famous piece by the Maggid of Meserich that he spoke about the seed that's got relevance, I think, to psychology, that he says that it's a rather famous thing, that he says when you plant a seed, before it begins to grow, it begins to disintegrate. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
So he says if a person wants to change completely, they want to go through that process of change, at first they really look as if they're disintegrating. They're stopping doing everything which they were doing before. But really, in actual fact, when you look later, you see that there's shoots coming out. Mm. And that the disintegration is part of the process of renewing. Something new comes out. What's old has somehow to disintegrate. And it's part of it.
Absolutely. You
know? So I'm sure it's got some connection with psychology. Some very, very strong connection.
Yes. Yeah.
Because people get alarmed when they see something, that's his idea, they get alarmed when they see something disintegrating. They think, oh, it's all falling to bits. But really it's not. Really it's growing, it's something new growing.
Well, you've got the saying, you've got to go down before you can go up.
Yes.
Sometimes you have to.
In other words, if you're not willing to leave something behind, in a way, you can't grow. Yeah. It's quite a deep thing, isn't it?
Something new.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And certainly this teaching about the grain, the seed disintegrating, comes from that teaching of the Mizrach Maggid. Yeah, absolutely. Who was the teacher of Rabbi Shneur Zalman. And so his teachings also, like the Baal Shem Tov, are flowing into these teachings that we're studying. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I think that must be one of his most famous. Well, I don't know. I don't know all his teachings, so I wouldn't know. But the little line out.
Certainly many famous teachings.
It's the most famous one I know.
Certainly that is one. Certainly that's a very important teaching.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay. And happy to the Shabbat. Have some fruit.